I'm visiting a place for the first time. You wouldn't think at 74 years old that I'd be shy, but I am. When it comes to, see, I started to tell you I was 47 backwards, but we'll forget that. But it is always a pleasure to be here, especially with a with the congregation that is helping to support me, and I would not dare start the sermon without first saying thank you so much for your financial support. It is not easy to come by. As many of you know, Sue and I were both widowed when we married near the end of 2016. Her other husband and I were good friends. He was also a preacher, and my other wife and her were good friends. So we all knew one another for about 8 years before we lost our mates. And Sue's made a joke before that maybe she feels like she's a glutton for punishment being married to two preachers. But I don't think that's how it has been. We are happy to be here this morning. It was a good gathering to where I could get to know some of you at the meal last night. And being a country gal, see, I'm a city slicker. I'm from St. Louis originally, though I've lived in Branson 26 years exactly. But being a country girl, she would, of course, appreciate things like a fish fry. There's nothing like a good old gathering like that to get acquainted. As the speaker, I recognize that I'm just a man. That's all God made me, just a male. And therefore, a mistake could be made because I'm not, while I feel like I've been inspired or somewhat by her, I wouldn't be preaching. I am not divinely inspired. So there's a mistake that could be made. And it'll be up to you to search the scriptures, which will be very easy to follow this morning, I assure you. And be sure that what is taught is the truth. Brethren, if it has been, then it will have been good for us to assemble this morning. I'm going to study what I hope will be, depending on how much time is allotted to me here, or if the time that I finishes within a reasonable time, to look at the first two chapters of the book of Ecclesiastes. Now, that just means the preacher, or as it says, written by King Solomon. I think that's very clear in a couple of the verses there. And, of course, if you know anything about King Solomon, he was most unusual in his living. While he was given more wisdom, with the exception of Jesus, he was the only human being that had more wisdom than anybody else before him and after him. And when God gave him that wisdom that he asked for while he was talking to God in a dream, then still he made his mistakes. He had 700 wives and 300 concubines. A lot of people believe that was politics. But he did have much more in the way of wisdom. And it was through Ecclesiastes that someone said perhaps indicated repentance on his part. We certainly hope so. But he speaks in Ecclesiastes, brethren, about life under the sun. Just in other words, just another way of saying, maybe a little fancy way of his saying, life on earth. And when you read this book, you can kind of find yourself looking in a mirror somewhat. Because when you look in that mirror, who do you see? Your own image, obviously. And you see how it exists in everyday life. He mentions the entertainment. He mentions the home life. He mentions various rules of government. He mentions how life can be so unfair at times and just not quite seem like the way that it ought to be. Well, as we look here, we see how in the first few verses here, brethren, how life goes in cycles. Now, he says here, the words of the preacher, the son of David. One moment here. I have to switch to reading glasses because of my bifocals. I've not even been wearing them a year right now. And if I don't switch to the reading glasses now, I'll be doing this the whole time. Yeah, my eyes are just not what they used to be. That's why Sue does the driving. Well, he says, the words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Now, while it doesn't come right out and say, brethren, that it is King Solomon, you'll see as we go along that he was the only one in his family that took the throne after King David had passed from this life. And as we see on, he was the only one that had all the wisdom that was given to him. So it must be King Solomon. Then we see somewhat of a lament as we go on here where he says, vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, vanity of vanities. Well, what is it? All is vanity. Now, when you read about the word vanity, we often think of the root word there, vain. But a lot of times, and especially in Ecclesiastes, does vanity mean that which is temporary? Everything in the physical and material life is temporary. Everything and everyone, we don't like to admit that, but it's true, that grows old and wears out. Material things as well as all that has to do with the physical. And he's just saying that maybe kind of like a forsooth, like you see in the Shakespeare plays. He says, vanity of vanities. Well, what is the vanity of vanities? Everything is vanity. Everything is just temporary. It's not going to last long. And he must have done a lot of traveling in his life, brethren, because he talks about how he returned and how he had traveled so many words, he says, all over the world. And then he notices how everything in life goes in cycles. Now, that's what you'll see, brethren, in the next few verses. He says, what profit hath a man of all his labor which he hath taken under the sun? No matter how much secular education you receive, no matter how hard you work, no matter what you may accomplish in this life, no matter what you may achieve, period, whether it's monetarily, property-wise, or just whatever it be, it's all going to come to an end. It's all going to end at the grave, and one day it's just all going to be no more. And that was kind of the lament that he had there concerning the end of this physical life. One day it's going to pass from us, no matter how long we live, even if, as we've heard the old phrase, I'm sure, even if you live as old as Methuselah, 969 years, somewhere along the line it's going to cease, it's going to be no more. And if there weren't more to look forward to than just a 6-foot grave, or to have our, for those of us who are going to be cremated, and I am, well, then if there was nothing more to look forward to that, how miserable life on earth would be, because no matter how happy you try and make it, no matter what you can accomplish, it's all going to end whenever we breathe our last. So that's why he said, what profit hath a man of all his labor which he taketh unto the sun? Whatever he whenever he dies, he leaves it all behind. And as you study later, somebody that takes it over may treat it right, may take care of it properly. Some of them may not. Then he says, one generation passeth away, and another generation cometh, but the earth abideth forever. The late black evangelist Marshall Keeble said, it doesn't pay to be arrogant. If you think you're not dirt yourself, you remember man was created from the dust of the ground, Genesis 2:7. You think you're not dirt yourself, just die. And he says, dirt is what you'll go right back to. It just does not pay to be arrogant. Well, there's one generation after another that comes. A generation comes and dies. Another one comes and dies. Another one comes and dies. That's one of the cycles of life. Every second that the world stands, regardless of whether it's you're in the part that's dark, when you're in the part that's light, all over the world, every second somebody's born, many are born, every second someone dies. And that little dash that we've heard argued before at some funerals, and like the one that we attended just the other day in Kentucky, tells just how short life is. Well, it's one generation after another that continues to pass. Then after he talks about human life here, he says, the sun also riseth, and the sun goeth down, and hasteth to its place where he arose. I remember the late preacher D. Bowman. I heard him preach on a cassette before I actually saw him preach. I'd met him before that, but hadn't seen him preach till I, or heard him preach till I heard him on this cassette. And he said, can you just imagine if you could live forever, live on a mountain, and watch that same sun rise and set, rise and set, rise and set. He says, after a while, you'd go crazy, seeing the same thing happen over and over again, because it never stops. It's the same thing week after month, after year, after century, after millennium. However long the world stands, that sun's going to continue to do nothing but rise and set, rise and set, rise and set. That's the one of the cycles of life. That part never changes. Many things in life do not change. Yes, there are things that do change, but as far as the laws of nature go, they always tend to stay intact. Then, talking about something else that's even more moving than the sun only goes in two directions, rising in the east and setting in the west. He says, the wind goeth toward the south and turneth about unto the north. It whirleth about continually, and the wind returneth again according to its circuits. Just like the sun rising and setting, the wind goes, as we sometimes used to term, to all four corners of the earth and comes right back where it started. There is your cycle of life. We just looked at the cycle of human life. We just looked at the cycle of nature. Well, actually, two cycles of nature here. Then, talking about the bodies of water, all the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. Unto the place from whence the rivers come, thither they return again. So whether you're talking about physical life, whether you're talking about material things, whether you're talking about that which is in outer space, the sun, moon, and stars, it all applies. It continually goes on and goes on and will until the end of time. The wise King Solomon noticed this the more that he lived and traveled around, and as we'll read in a few moments, he was looking for the why or the wherefore of everything, and even in all of his wisdom, he says, you can't do it because of God. But I'm getting a little ahead of myself here. Then talking about how life is, all things are full of labor. I think we would all very much agree with that. Man cannot utter it. Well, that doesn't mean that he can't speak there. That means you can't describe what all life is made of. You can't describe everything that goes on in the world at the same time. What is going on right now? Where it's dark, where it's light. You don't know every home life. You don't know every job. You don't know everything that occurs in this world. There's so much work that you can't fully describe the depth of it, the length of it, and the breadth of it. Then he says the eye is not satisfied with seeing. That means that you never see at all. Now, if there's one thing probably a lot of us in here who've lived a while learned to see, and you don't have to live to my age to recognize it, but after you're on this earth for a while, what do you see? You learn that you can never see at all. Oh, I've seen it all. And then what happens? What'll happen every time? I know it happened to you just like it did to me, and vice versa. Things happen that surprise us, things that we thought would never take place, things that we thought were impossible, or that maybe we only dreamed of but were hoping that wouldn't occur, they occur. People that suddenly change that you thought you knew year after year after year. You just can't describe it all here. Then the ear filled with hearing. You never see it all, you never hear it all. Things that our ears hear shock us. Well, I thought I'd never heard that out of somebody, or I thought I'd never hear such and things happening. Solomon said, this is all part of the cycle of life. Never think that you're going to be able to describe it all. Never think you're going to be able to see it all. Never think you're going to be able to hear it all. Such is just not the case. Then he says, the thing that which hath been is that which shall be. This was both before Solomon's time and afterwards up to this very time. And that which is done is that which shall be done. And there is no new thing under the sun. Now we've all heard this phrase before. When it comes to generics, not the specifics here, but when it comes to things that are in general, all generic things that exist now existed back in the day of King Solomon, and they existed all the way back to the beginning of the first family, because sin was already in the world whenever Cain and Abel were born, and especially as the world began to get more and more populated, you'll find that the same thing happens, just like the blowing of the wind, the setting of the sun, the setting of the stars, and the moving of the stars, the rotation of the stars, and so forth. All of that has been going on, and you can't find anything that's new. Now, you just try to think of anything in the way of generic that's going on now that didn't go on in Solomon's time, and that you don't read that went back, that went on back in this day and time, all the way back to the creation. Now, there's always been weddings. Sad to say, there's always been funerals. There's always been a doctor since sin come into the world that you, of course, read about in the Garden of Eden in Genesis 3. There's always been business. There's always been entertainment. And you know, one thing that kind of always tickles me is that if you were to ask you talk about nothing new under the sun, if you were to ask the parents and grandparents and great-grandparents of this day and time, what's the biggest problem with the young people? They don't listen to their elders. But you know what? What were you and I hearing as parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents when we were growing up? You don't pay attention to the teachings of your elders. Now, grandparents, what were your parents and grandparents and great-grandparents saying when you were growing up? You don't listen to what your elders try to say. Great-grandparents, what were your parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents saying when you were growing up? You don't listen to what your elders try to tell you. And then, all the way back to the beginning, because again, sin was in the world already when Cain and Abel were born. What has every single solitary generation of parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents said about every single solitary generation of young parents, and every generation, or rather young people, and every generation of young people say the same thing whenever it comes to their time of being parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents? You don't listen to your elders. And each generation is always worse than the one before, isn't it? Now, you may have a point on that one, but the point is not that it's wrong, not that it's sin that we're talking about when we don't listen to the ones that we should have listened to, but which all of us shared discipline in growing up. The issue, brethren, that it's not new. You can't find anything that's new under the sun, whatever it be. What King Solomon say here? The thing which hath been is that which shall be, and that which is done is that which shall be done. Now, remember, he's saying this just like all of the rest of the Bible, brethren, under the pen of divine inspiration. It's got to be right. It can't be wrong. There is no new thing under the sun. Just different disguises, just different masks, or whatever way you want to word it. Then he says here, kind of expounding on it in the next verse, is there anything whereof it may be said, see, this is new? What did he say in the verse before time? It hath already been of old time which was before us. Solomon traveled all around and he saw the same thing happening in family, after business, after entertainment business, and all that makes up life on earth, or as he says in here a few times, life under the sun. Then it's kind of depressing perhaps in the next verse, especially as you get older. There is no remembrance of former things, neither shall there be any remembrance of things which are to come, which that those that shall come after. You know, it's a sad thing. One of our members back in Branson before he passed on made the statement that after you pass from this life, how long are you remembered? After a generation passes, you're forgotten about. Who's going to hear my name X number of years after I'm gone? Well, why is that? Those that buried you or those that knew you, they pass on. What Solomon say? One generation passeth and another generation cometh. And it just keeps on. Birth, death, birth, death. All of the cycles that we're reading about in life, and no matter how many cycles of life come and go, you still see the same things going on now that went on in Solomon's time and all the times that you're reading about, down to the crime that goes on and all sin you mentioned. We think we're living in bad times now, and I grant you we are. We are. But then it's kind of like the old saying goes, that which was, the times that we have now, we must remember there's always been times like these. And after we're gone, after a generation, we'll be totally forgotten about. Then as he said in verse 1, I the preacher was king over Israel in Jerusalem. Nation of Israel was still united here. And I gave my heart. Now he got curious and wanted to use his wisdom, which you don't see God condemning him for, to try to find the why or the wherefore of everything. And no matter how many IQs are high, no matter how high a person's IQ may be, you're just not going to find it, even with Solomon's IQ. I gave my heart to seek and search out, not just by looking, not just by knowing, but by wisdom. Wisdom, of course, is the application of knowledge, and even though his wisdom went very deep, he still could not find out everything that went on. It says, I gave my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all things. He explored all of life, you name it, he hit it all, that are done under heaven, this sore travail. And if we try it, it'll be a sore travail too. Hath God given to the sons of man to be exercised therewith. God wants us to hold him in awe. He wants us to check out the way his wisdom and how he is in reference to the why or the wherefore of everything. He wants us to check out his creation, and need I say, he wants us to study his word. Then he says, I've seen all the works. Now remember, he's been around. He's seen it all as far as he could possibly see as a human being, all the works that are done under the sun. And behold, after he traveled all around, after he'd seen all the people he'd seen, after he'd seen all the happenings that he'd seen, both negative and positive, And what is it? All is vanity and vexation of the spirit. Well, along with vanity, of course, meaning again, as I said a while ago, temporary, the vexation of the spirit, well, when you're vexed, you're of course troubled. I'd like to think, well, I wouldn't like to think, but it's the truth anyway, that you're deeply troubled. All of it bothered him when he saw that even with his wisdom, he couldn't figure out everything. Then as we read, and one example of it, that which is crooked cannot be made straight, and that which is wanting cannot be numbered. Another way to read this, not everything that is crooked can be straightened out, and not everything that is lacking as far as being complete is concerned, you'll be able to complete. Some things are going to remain lacking. Some things are going to remain crooked. You're not going to solve all the world's ills. And this is a trouble that many people have. They get angry with God because of what he says in his word. Why doesn't he say this? Why doesn't he say that? How come he couldn't have this? How come we can't have that? How come he has to feel this way? How come he has to feel that way? Well, the only two answers that I can give as a mere man is in Isaiah 55, verses 8 and 9. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, saith the Lord. Well, now, just how much higher is God's mind and his thinking, his infinite wisdom, as compared to our finite minds? Because you probably know infinite means without limits, finite means with limits. As the heavens are higher than the earth, that's a lot of miles, that's a lot of light years, so are my ways higher than your ways and my thoughts than your thoughts. That's why it's foolish to argue with the Word of God. That's why it's foolish the way some people do to just gripe, gripe, gripe about everything that we find in life that we can't figure out. Why can't it be this way? Well, you know what my mother would tell me when I was a young boy? Because that's the way God intended for it to be. Well, that shut me up pretty quickly, I promise you. So there's things that we're not always going to have control over. Now, he's searching his own mind as we begin here, where he says, I communed with mine own heart, saying, lo. Or listen now, he's saying, I am come to great state, and have gotten more wisdom than all they that have been before me in Jerusalem. He humbly asked for it, God gave it to him, and he was able to do it right at the snap of a finger. Yea, my heart had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. That we know. Again, with the exception of Jesus, he was the wisest human being that ever walked this earth. And I gave my heart to know wisdom. I excelled in it all that I possibly could. And to know madness and folly, I looked at both extremes. I experienced both extremes. I perceived that this is also vexation of the spirit. When he saw just how extreme some madness was, that troubled him. When he saw just how much extreme some knowledge was, that troubled him. For in much wisdom is much grief. Now that shouldn't disturb us and bother us to the point to where we don't try to learn all we can from the Word of God. But he says here, in much knowledge, he says, in much wisdom is much grief, and he that increaseth in knowledge increaseth sorrow. Well, when I got to analyzing that some years back, I got thinking how true, well, of course it's true, but in as far as what he might have meant by that, the various lessons I might pull out of that, he said here in so many words that the more you learn, the more you realize that there is to learn, and the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know, and what might be troublesome for some of us is the more you learn, the more you realize you'll never know it all. And one thing too, there are some things we have no need of knowing, like whittling on God's end of the stick, as it says in Deuteronomy 29:29, where it teaches us that the secret things belong to God. And if you're like me, you were curious, you just had to know a particular fact about something, you had to know the true story about something, and sometimes whenever we find out what we were actually looking for, we wish we'd never even searched it to begin with. And another thing too, if you're like me, much younger, there are things that we found out got us into trouble. There are things that we don't need to be knowing. Well then, but again, when it comes to the Word of God, we learn all we can. Well, as he continues the thought here in chapter 2, he says, I said in mine heart, go to now, I will prove, that would be demonstrate, thee with mirth or joy, pleasure. Therefore, enjoy pleasure, and behold, this also is vanity. He learned that when he studied all these extremes, it's best not to be an extremist. It's best not to try to look for all fun in life. It's best not to look for all negative in life, all grief in life. It will come naturally. Satan will see to that on the negative part. Then he says, I said of laughter, it is mad. I excelled in laughter and it was just too much. It's enough to make a person go crazy. And of mirth, what doeth it? Trying to find all fun in life, that's not happiness. Looking at all the negative things that are in life, and I do admit I've had some lessons on that myself, that is not right to do. So we're talking about trying to find that happy medium here, brethren. So again, he's looking within him on, within his own self, saying, I sought in mine heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainting my heart with wisdom, and to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was that good for the sons of men, which they should do under the heaven all the days of their life. Now this goes deep here. All that has to do with the tangible, in other words, what you can touch, I searched out. You name it, I searched it. No exceptions here. Everything that had to do with the tangible, I searched out. All that had to do with the intangible, such as the faith, the conscience, the emotions, feelings, love, and so forth. I searched all of that out. And I wanted everything that my eye fell on that I wanted, I got. I made me great works. I builded me houses. I planted me vineyards. I made me gardens and orchards. And I planted trees in them of all kinds of fruits. And then whenever you do all of that, there's, you know, like everything you have in life, you have to make provisions for it. You have to have the proper maintaining of it, such as when you maintain your house, whether you're talking about cleaning it or having repairs on it. You maintain your vehicle that you drive, whether you talk about making repairs for it or just keeping it in the proper shape. I made me pools of water. This is the way of providing for it. To water, therefore, the wood that bringeth forth trees and all the orchards, in other words, that I grew. Now, we're going right down here to not only that, but as far as life in the home is concerned, and right on down to entertainment. I excelled in all of that, Solomon said. I got me servants and maidens, and had servants born in my house. Remember the many wives he had. Also, I had great possessions of great and small cattle. How rich were you, Solomon? Above all that were in Jerusalem before me. I was the richest in property. I was the richest, as we'll see in a while, in money. I was the richest in everything. Everything I want, I got. Now, did that make him happy? I gathered me also silver and gold, and the peculiar or different treasure of kings and of the provinces. In other words, treasures that mainly only kings could have. And there are those who try to find something that nobody else can have so they can say, I'm the only one that has it. Well, I was in that category too, Solomon says. Now, what about entertainers? I got me men singers and women singers, and the delights of the sons of men as musical instruments. Yes, they existed back then. Some of them did then. And that of all sorts. Everything that existed in the way of musical instruments, everything that existed in the way of entertainment back here, I got it. So I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. But through all that, also my wisdom remained with me. He was able to keep it on a certain level and kind of keep halfway control of it all. Now, what did I just say about he got whatever he wanted? And whatsoever mine eyes desired, my eyes fell on it, and I wanted it, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy. Everything that was fun, I went after. Everything that was enjoyable, I went after. Everything that was pleasurable, I went after. For my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my portion, or my reward, my part of the reward, of all my labor. Now, when you read the next verse, brethren, it's like he's saying, now, I told you as the reader all of that to tell you this. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had wrought or brought about, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, Even though he got all that he wanted, did that make him happy? Now, I know many don't want to agree with this, but remember, this was under the pen of divine inspiration. So that means no matter how many try it, it's just not going to work. I tried it all, Solomon said. He says, all was vanity, temporary, and vexation of spirit. Well, you know, all that he got, the more you get, the more you're responsible for. There's nothing wrong in being rich. You can't find that being wrong if you search from Genesis to Revelation. Abraham was rich, but he didn't put his wealth before Jehovah God. Job was rich, and we know he didn't put his wealth before Jehovah God. In fact, he was blessed materially double after his suffering was over with. But this was troubling here, because the more you have, the more you're responsible for. And sometimes, as he said later on, which I don't think we'll get to today, he says you can lose sleep over it. And there was no profit under the sun. Now you just think about that for a minute. He got all that he wanted materially, got all that he wanted physically, all that he wanted in the way of his own feelings and his own pleasures and all emotions, and it still did not make an individual happy. Well, there are many who have died rich and claimed that even though they got all that they wanted, it didn't make them happy. Is it a sin to be rich? No. Just understand what priorities are. All that he made. And then he said, verse 12, I turned myself to behold wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do that cometh after the king? That's me, he says. Even that which hath already been done. What I've done, others have done, maybe not to the extent that he had because of all the wisdom that he had. I haven't done anything that nobody else has done. I haven't seen anything that nobody else has done. I haven't witnessed, I haven't experienced anything that nobody else has done. Just what can be done, even that which hath already been done. Then I saw that wisdom excelleth folly as far as light excelleth darkness. Well, we know that you can't get much opposite, more opposite than light and dark. Where there's light, there's not dark. Where there's darkness, there's not light. You'll never see them, no matter who argues what, both of them together. One is always going to be absent when the other one's there. That's how opposite he saw that wisdom and folly was. Why? Because while he had all that wisdom that God gave him, he excelled in folly too. And he saw that, well, what is a folly? Foolishness. I excelled in all of that. And he saw just how different they were as night and day. The wise man's eyes are in his head. I have to chuckle when I come to that part. I was a normal boy growing up. I looked at the girls, you know. And sometimes I'd be with a friend of mine. We'd be eating lunch in high school or in some other public place. And a pretty woman would walk by and I'd look and he'd say, get your eyes back in your head. Well, the wise man's eyes are in his head. And the fool walketh in darkness. Well, why? He doesn't care about wisdom. All he cares about is folly. What can I get out of it? What's going to be for me? Somebody wrote a book one time. Well, like, what is in it for me? And then he says, I myself perceive that there is one event that happeneth to them all. Now, if you've never read Ecclesiastes, then you probably know what he's coming up to either way. Then said I in my heart, as it happeneth to the fool, so it happeneth even to me. No matter how much of a fool, no matter how wise somebody, either way, extreme that you want to go, or anywhere in the middle for the happy medium, he says, why was I then more wise? What good did it do to me to become as wise as I have, learn all that I have, when I still don't know it all? And that's the way it is with God. You never figure out the why or the wherefore, everything with God. Then I said in my heart, this also is vanity. All of it's vain too. Wisdom dies with the individual. Foolishness dies with the individual. All that we have in this life, we leave behind. For there, as we read a few verses back, is no remembrance of the wise more than of the fool forever. So why did I become as smart as I am, as wise as God gave me? I'm going to die too. That's going to be the end of it. Seeing that which now in the days to come shall all be forgotten, as we read a few verses back. When a generation's gone, all after we pass, all will be forgotten. And how dieth the wise man as the fool? That's pretty depressing. If you didn't know, and if you didn't believe, you wouldn't be here this morning anyway, that there is a better life after this. There is something after this where it doesn't decay, where it doesn't wear out, where there's no sin, where there's nobody around to stick a screwdriver in the cogwheels, a monkey wrench in the mechanisms, raining on the parade. You get the point, I'm sure. Somebody's always out to get you. Somebody's always trying to undermine you. That's the devil that's working under many, through many people. All of that has to do with living life under the sun. We're going to face it. Then, how dieth, he says, the wise man as the fool. Foolish people die. Wise people die. It's all going to that same physical grave. Therefore, I hated life. After I got everything I wanted, after I explored everything that I possibly could explore on earth, that God allowed him to do it, and you'll see where he condemned him for it, it became depressing. Now, you know, we did read back a little ways where he said that when you increase in knowledge, you increase in heartache. Therefore, I hated life because the work that is wrought under the sun is grievous unto me. Well, why? As he said again, for all is vanity and vexation of the spirit. Yea, I hated all my labor which I had taken under the sun. After I did everything I wanted to do, after I got everything that I wanted, why? Because that I should leave it unto the man that shall be after me. Now, I don't remember who this particular preacher was. If anyone does, share your knowledge after the service. But there was a gospel preacher, I'm talking about one from the Church of Christ, who visited a rich Texan one time that had land that just surrounded in him. He was, from what I gather, in the middle of it all. And as he's visiting him, they're having a cookout. I've heard you hardly can beat ranch cooking. And so they're visiting, this preacher and his wife and family are visiting this Texan, and he said, sir, pointing in one direction, as far this way as you can point, I own that. As far that way as you can point, I own that. As far this way you can point, I own all of that. And yes, you guessed it. As far this way as you can look, I own that. The preacher looked at him and said, how much of that you own? Yes, we can gather all that we can in this life, but are we building our hopes on the Lord Jesus Christ? All that has to do with living life under the sun. Yes, he said, I hated all my labor because I should leave it unto the man that shall come after it. Verse 18. When you leave something, some sort of an inheritance, or you just die suddenly and someone else has to take over, Solomon says, you don't know. There's no way you can know because you're in the next world and all physical life is cut off. You no longer know what's going on with your family. You no longer know what's going on with your friends. You no longer know what's going on in business or what the news is when you turn on your cable TV or direct or whatever it is that you have. None of that you know anymore. He says, who knoweth whether he shall be a wise man or a fool that takes over where you left off? Well, we know the case with Jeroboam, do we not? Rehoboam. Yet shall he have rule over all my labor wherein I have labored. I won't have control of it anymore. I won't have any say-so. And if he messes up, I won't be there to correct him. I just won't have any control. And wherein I have showed myself wise under the sun. All of this, he says, was so depressing. This is also vanity. Therefore, as we read, I went about to cause my heart to despair of all the labor which I took under the sun. After getting all of what I want, again, both tangible and intangible, getting things my way and nothing that was missed that I wanted, trying to learn all that I could possibly learn, vanity. It's going to all end. I'm going to leave it all behind one day. For there is a man whose labor is in wisdom and in knowledge and in iniquity, I'll make that equity, yet to a man that hath not labored therein shall he leave it for his portion. This also is vanity and a great evil. This is vexation. This is troubling of the heart to know, are my children going to handle things right after I leave? Are they going to continue to live righteous after I go? I don't know one way or the other. For what hath man of all his labor, what's he going to do when he leaves here? And of the vexation of his heart and all the problems that we have, All the successes we had, all the problems that we had, all the failures that we had, all the solving of the problems, everything that we get in this life, it's going to stop when we breathe our last. Wherein he hath labored under the sun. For all his days are sorrows, and his travail, grief. Yea, his heart taketh no rest in the night. I mentioned that sometimes you can have so much that you lose sleep trying to keep track of what you have. This is also vanity. But then he kind of turns the coin over here. There's also a bright side to this. There's nothing wrong with enjoying the fruits of your labor. You earn, use it. You make use of it. Enjoy it. Sometimes you hear people say, well, I make a lot of good money, but I don't have any time to spend it. They make it, they need to spend it. And they need to, of course, properly, being proper stewards. But he says, there is nothing better for a man that he should eat and drink, and that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw, that it is from the hand of God. We work to earn our salary. Let's use it. Let's use it. Let's use it properly, but let's enjoy it. And some people don't seem like they can have any enjoyment of life no matter what. I'm reminded one time of a preacher who said somewhere in Illinois there was this little small country store, and there was a bunch of men that would meet around there every day, and you know how they get together and spin their yarns, you know, and chew their tobacco and smoke and things like that a lot of times. And there was one man that never had anything nice to say about the weather. Well, you guessed it, probably. One day, it was perfect outside. It was not too hot, not too cold. And they were wondering what he was going to say. Talking about not enjoying anything in life. They're watching him as he walks in the store. He looks around and says, it won't last. Is that the way we are? Can't find a nice thing to say about some things. Can't ever reach a point in life to where we're satisfied or pleased. But then he went on to say in verse 25, for who can eat, or who else can hasten thereunto more than I? I've experienced it all. And no matter if you get everything that you want, if you feel everything as deep as you can possibly feel it, that's still not going to bring about true happiness. Because happiness itself is intangible. We all know that, though. For God giveth to a man that is good in his sight wisdom and knowledge. He gives it to us. We just need to use it. I used to hear my folks say, use your head for something besides a hat rack. And joy. But to the sinner, now you do pay for all wrongs, he giveth travail to gather and to heap up, that he may give to him that is good before God. He pays the consequences and works for the righteous man. You might be saying this applies to civil authority. This also is vanity and vexation of spirit. Now the first few verses of chapter 3 we'll read quickly, and then the lesson will be yours. And I thank you for your attendance and attention this morning. Remember, there's a time for everything. I used to hear my folks say that as well, and I'm sure yours were no different. To everything there is a season. This came from a song, a pop song many years back. And a time to every purpose under heaven. A time to be born, a time to die. A time to plant, a time to pluck up that which is planted. A time to kill, a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to get, and we don't like it, but we experience it, a time to lose. A time to keep and a time to cast away. A time to rend and a time to sow. A time to keep silence and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. Yes, we are allowed to hate some things. A time of war in a time of peace. And as the song also said, when it came to war and peace, I swear it's not too late. I'll leave the lesson with you this morning. But you know, I hope this kind of baits you to want to study it if you not have yet to do so, or if it's been a while since you looked at the book. Because at the very end, after he tells how man's life is under the sun and how he was denied nothing he wanted, he got down to the basics. The very last two verses of the entire book, Fear God and keep us. Well, first, let's hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. Doesn't matter what we have in this life, if we're not baptized believers, as Jesus said in Mark 16:16, or if we're not continuing to live righteous, there'll be an unfortunate price to pay for at the end. No matter how much we have in life, it's not going to gain us eternal life. We can't pay our way to heaven with silver and gold, because we can't pay our way to heaven, period. If you are a subject, we beg of you to make your life right this morning, right now, while together we stand and sing.
Jesus the Lord.